Hello and welcome back to the show, everybody. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Otherwear on BBS Radio. And this week we're doing it by the seat of our pants. As you may have noticed, things didn't quite sound right. We had a slight problem with the intro for the show, so all of the prefacing I was going to do for our next guest, Mr. Fred Burks, will come up now. But before we introduce him, the theme of today's show is exploring the illusion of separation. And I think Fred Burks is going to be a really wonderful person to speak to about this subject. The wisdom and understanding of our own inner essence is a beacon that draws us inward towards an ever deeper connection with the divine. Yet rather than look for divine wisdom within, most people have long preferred to look outward, thus maintaining a dependence upon a vast hierarchy that stretches between the individual and the divine. In all our wanderings away from the divine, humankind has obscured its most compelling features through a persistent belief in limitations defined by the hierarchical structure of our world. The divine dances outside of the confines of any hierarchical structures. It is complete within itself and has a singular purpose of demonstrating the collective potential of all life within the universe. And Fred Burks, our next guest, specializes in helping people to open their hearts to each other through empowering exercises that remind us that deep down we all just want to be loved and to love. He's a tireless light worker, in my opinion, who for the last 4 years has awakened to his mission fully, and which I'm sure you will all find quite remarkable when you hear what he has to say. He's kindly agreed to spend his Saturday night with us and through our dialogue help dispel that pervasive illusion of the world of separation and help us see that we can all experience increased levels of oneness or unity consciousness in our everyday lives. He'll also share his thoughts on his favourite current work, coordinating the webofloveorg website. And if that name sounds familiar to you, it may be because each week at the end of the show, we complete our work together and our time together with a collective connecting into the web of love. As we all hook ourselves into it and become aware of it once again, not only do we strengthen the web of love within us, but we strengthen the love around the whole planet as well. So, without any further ado, let's introduce Mr. Fred Burks to Otherwear. Hello and welcome.
Hi, Liz, and hello, listeners.
You've had a fascinating career, Fred. You've worked as a contract Indonesian language interpreter for the US State Department for over 18 years, or you did until last year, or 2 years ago, sorry. And you also first started interpreting at the presidential level in 1995 at a White House meeting for President Clinton and President Suharto of Indonesia with their top advisors. You've also worked as a registered psych nurse. You've spent years of teaching English in communist China. And you've just had a fascinating life. So I'm really looking forward to our time together today.
Thank you very much, Liz. And if you don't mind, I'd love to start off just calling in some sacred energies to be with us and to be with all of our listeners today.
That's a really wonderful idea.
So I'd just like to invite you and I and everyone listening to open our hearts for a minute to whatever is best for us in this time together, opening to spiritual guidance to all of our guides who might help us along the path towards whatever is best for each one of us and for all of us in this world and in this universe. And I give thanks for this opportunity to share time with all of you.
Thank you for that. That was beautiful. And it's such a wonderful way to begin our work together to just state the intent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that maybe that could be a great starting point, the word intent. We hear about it a lot more than we used to these days, particularly through the work of Dr. Wayne Dyer. What are your thoughts on how we might use intent in our lives for the most positive outcome?
Well, I have found in my own life that intention is vitally important. It kind of like sets direction for me in my life in every day and in every moment of my life. And what I've done is I've actually really worked very carefully on developing my intentions to get them so that they're in full resonance with my own deepest being. And I actually have posted here on my wall my life intentions, which I read at least once a week, read through all of them. And every day, morning when I wake up and every evening before I go to sleep, read the main ones and just feel them and invite them to help guide me along my journey.
Well, working with intentions as statements like that and being able to review them somewhere handy is always a really good idea. And some of the research into the way our DNA works with language demonstrates that our DNA follows a lot of the same types of grammatical and semantic rules that language follows. And as we make ourselves aware of statements like, I give all that I am into the service of all that is, which is your deepest commitment to your work here, is actually heard in the DNA, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
And just through the interaction with that statement, with the intent that it carries, it literally changes the DNA itself.
Mm-hmm. For me, it feels like there's a kind of resonance that happens. So as I say, each of these statements, they resonate deep within my soul, and I imagine within the DNA too, so that it creates a resonance throughout my entire energetic field that helps me to move clearly through life in each moment.
Well, that's something that we're going to be really delving deep into tonight, your experiences with moving amongst some of the most influential circles of the power elite in the world and having their ears, having the ears of presidents, no less. And I believe that one of your nicknames was the Whisperer.
Oh, I haven't heard that one, but it could be.
It kind of, you know, it makes sense, and especially after hearing about your experiences in Bali after the 2002 Bali bombings,
mm-hmm.
and how you were working alongside President Bush as he was alongside with other members of his cabinet over there to discuss the case of Abu Bashir. But we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
We should probably tell you a little bit about that, though, right now, because you were working as an Indonesian language interpreter. Last year, it was actually this time last year, January, you were in the news quite a lot, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Would you please tell the audience why?
Oh, it's kind of a long story, but I'll try to keep it brief. Basically, a couple years ago, in September of 2003, I was asked to interpret at a secret meeting in the private residence of then-President Megawati Sukarnoputri of Indonesia. And basically, the three Americans present put heavy pressure on President Megawati to try to secretly turn over Abu Bakr Bashir to the Americans, and actually used a term that's been in the news a bit lately called rendering.
Oh, yes, I'm familiar with that term. It's a very interesting way of describing
what
they actually do, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And in fact, I was not aware of that usage of the term before the meeting, and the Asia director of the National Security Council, whose name is Karen Brooks, briefed me ahead of time and said, do you know what render means? And I said, well, yeah, to render something intelligible. But she said, no, this is a specific meaning. And basically what rendering is it's an extra legal capturing and surrendering of somebody who's in one nation to another nation.
And by extra legal, I guess that means illegal.
Well, you know, this is the whole debate, and this is what you're seeing in the newspapers. Is it actually illegal? Now, of course, many of us are going to feel that it is, but if you go into intelligence services and all of the complex Byzantine thinking of the sort of which is behind government, there are those who believe it is illegal and have their justification.
Well, that kind of goes, that's pretty much a given though these days.
Sure.
When it comes to moving people around willy-nilly, you know, on whims and on very flimsy sort of you know, grounds.
Right. So to sort of wrap the story up, basically, the United States government had all along been insisting in the press and various places that they've never put any pressure on the case of Abu Bakr al-Bashir. And here I was in a meeting where they were putting heavy pressure to render or secretly capture and turn him over to the United States. And so what happened was eventually, about a year after that, well, it's actually in 2002, I'm sorry, not in 2003. So it was 2 years after that, late 2004, I resigned from the State Department because of excessive secrecy demands. And,
Sorry, please go ahead.
So once I resigned, I felt no longer an ethical or moral obligation to keep this information secret. And in fact, I had never signed any secrecy agreements with the State Department, which most people think, and I myself thought was quite strange considering that I'm interpreting for the president.
Well, but, it is. It's like a glaring omission in someone's duty.
Yes, and they've changed that now.
They didn't get you to sign something that they really should have.
Yes, they've changed it, in fact, and made it way overly secretive, which is why I resigned. I would not have resigned if they only required me to hold secret anything that could potentially affect national security or something along those lines. But they required a new oath that was far too secretive.
So you were in Indonesia and you were working basically on the side of the defense team when Bashir's court case went to court.
True.
And you spoke on his behalf and stated that he was indeed innocent. What happened with that case?
Well, let me mention first that I did not at all state that he was innocent.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Right. In fact, you know, if you investigate Bashir's background, he definitely has been involved in some questionable activity. Now, the whole reason I was willing to testify, though, and the reason that many Indonesians are very passionate about this case is because it's very clear that the international press wants to be setting up this man to be an evil terrorist in the class of Osama bin Laden. Now, he clearly is not a man with the best intentions. Well, for all people, he wants a Muslim state and he wants the whole world to become a Muslim-run world. I do not agree with this. Neither do many of the people who were lawyers representing him. But we do believe in individuals' rights to express their opinions. And the fact that the international media was painting him to be an evil terrorist, that I completely do not agree with. Yes, he had his own intentions, but he was not an evil terrorist. And the attempts to severely manipulate this man, to me, were quite unjust. And that is the reason I chose to testify in the trial.
Well, I'm sure he was pretty glad that you were willing and able to do that for him. It wouldn't be very often that that kind of opportunity would come along, you know?
Right. And you know, the same thing is that there was one of the heads of there's two very large Muslim organizations in Indonesia that are quite influential and very well respected. The leader of one of those had also been approached by U.S. Ambassador Ralph Boyce, putting pressure on him to try to influence leaders of the government to keep him in jail. So, and he testified immediately before me. So there were others who clearly were pressured around this case.
Right. Could you tell me a little bit about the experience that you had while you were in Indonesia prior to the court case, when you were over there with Bush and you happened to be getting ready for a meeting that day between the Bush camp and the Indonesian camp?
Sure. That was in Bali in October of 2003. And President Bush was doing a four-hour stopover to visit Indonesia. And I had gone over a few days in advance, as I often do, and preparing myself and working together to help get things ready with a huge team, by the way. They have, by the time the meeting takes place, there's about 500 Americans there all working to make it happen smoothly. So that morning, I woke up and decided, okay, I want to be in a nice, deep, open state. And I had also invited through my network of friends over the internet, literally thousands of people, to join me during the meeting in beaming love and invitations for opening to what's best for all to these world leaders. So I felt, you know, a wonderful privilege to be able to channel all of this energy into a meeting at the highest levels of government. So that morning I woke up and I went on a run in this nice hotel and out across the green lawns and then down some steep steps. There was a cliff down to the beach. And so I ran down these steep steps, several hundred feet. And when I arrived at the bottom, at the beach with the ocean right there, I looked down and there was this large, silvery blue, about 6 foot dead dolphin right in front of me, right at the bottom of the steps. And it shook me for a moment. It's like, whoa, what is this? And, you know, I said, well, what kind of sign is this for the morning of the very important meeting? And yet I realized, no, I didn't know what it meant, but I know that each of us has power to determine what meaning we give to whatever happens in our lives.
Absolutely.
And so I decided, well, this doesn't have to be a bad omen. I can just sit and see what, you know, what's here for me. So I sat down right next to the body of this beautiful dolphin and just opened my heart. And I felt the presence of this dead dolphin with me. It felt like a very warm, playful presence. And in fact, almost immediately felt the presence of the whole school of dolphins of which this particular dolphin had been a part. And feeling their loving presence and their playful presence with me, I saw that the death doesn't bother them. They were just here, and in a way, this was a gift to me to feel their presence and take that presence with me into that particular meeting.
And how did you, or how were you able to notice that things were a bit different than they normally would have been? What were some of the clues?
Well, there were strange things that happened in that meeting, and it's hard to say, was it a result of all of this or not? But when they first together, basically, you know, there's the two delegations, and the Megley delegation was already in the room, and the Bush delegation came in, and I was standing to the side, and as the delegation came in, President Bush and Condoleezza Rice and then his chief of staff, Andrew Card. And as soon as Andrew Card came in and saw me, he had a big smile and he walked right over to me and shook my hand and said, "Hey, it's great to see you." And I said, "Well, thank you." But that was very strange because I had, to my knowledge, only met Andrew Card once before, which was a month previous at another meeting between Bush and Megawati near the UN in New York. And we hadn't said a word to each other. So it was quite strange to me. He just walked over and said, "Hey, thanks for being here."
Yeah.
And then another time during lunch, sort of they had a luncheon as part of this meeting. I was sitting, I always sit just to the side and behind President Bush helping with the interpretation. And Karen Brooks, who I'd mentioned as the Asian Affairs expert of the National Security Council, came up. And I had known her and met her and talked with her a few times. But it's not at all like we're good friends. You know, she's a business contact who, you know, we liked each other but hadn't had much contact. She walked up right in the middle of this lunch, leaned over and gave me this big old kiss on the cheek that lasted like 2 seconds. I'm like, what was that about? I mean, it was great, but it was just kind of a surprise. So those were little things that happened.
Yeah, that every time I hear a story about something else a dolphin's done or being part of, I just never fail to be amazed at how incredible their presence is and how transformative their energy seems to be. And, I mean, that dolphin wasn't even alive.
That's right.
but it was still very much able to communicate with you on another more subtle level.
Right, and talking about separation and connection,
yeah.
The fact that almost as soon as I felt the soul of this dolphin, I felt the whole school that it was a part of.
Right, yeah.
Is another example of the interconnectedness of the dolphin species.
Yeah, they're really absolutely fascinating. Have you ever swum with a dolphin?
I did have one very special experience with dolphins. Are you familiar with James Twyman?
Yes.
He has the website emissaryoflight.com, and he does a lot of great work. They call him the Peace Troubadour. I was at a conference of his in Hawaii on the Big Island, and we went out on a dolphin swimming trip, and I managed to end up on James' boat with about 40 other people.
That would have been a pretty good boat ride.
Oh, great. And James invited us when the dolphins came to really open and see if we had any questions to ask them. And so once they came, there's this whole large school of swimming right alongside the boat, these spinner dolphins. They jump out of the water, spin several times, and fall back in. Very playful, wonderful creatures. And so I thought, I sat in silence for a minute. I said, well, what I want to ask these beautiful dolphins is just what will help to guide me along my path right now, whatever information I need to help me be the best person I can be on this planet. And I received this almost instantaneous communication that blew me away, basically. It was, they showed me in an instant how in a number of past lifetimes, I have taken many people's energy, claiming that I would be able to use it better than they would for the good.
And, how interesting.
Yes. And I had done this numerous times in many ways and often abused the position of power in those past lifetimes, playing sort of a guru game where, I became obsessed with my own power and became very good at getting people to surrender their power to me.
Yeah.
And the dolphin's message is instantaneously. I had never known this. I had known I had done some things in past lifetime, but they just showed me. And then their message was, it's time to give that energy back. And so it was an astounding revelation to me, and something that I have been very conscious of. And some of the work I'm doing on the internet is a way of giving back all of the energy that I've taken over the years.
Well, let's talk a little bit about those websites that you're coordinating. Besides weboflove.org, there's wantoknow.info, which is a wonderful website with verifiable information on major cover-ups that you've posted and have allowed people to have access to, so that they can get the down low on what's really being what's really happening, what you haven't been told. Could you tell us a little bit more about that website, as well as the Moment of Love and the GC for All website, as well as building a global community website?
Sure. I 4 years ago, I watched a videotape that showed me that things were not what I had once thought in the world. I used to be one who would debunk conspiracy theorists, people who thought that there's a small group of people that run the entire planet. And I would scoff and laugh at them because I had been at the top level meetings and never seen any evidence of this. But then a wonderful spiritual friend of mine sent me a videotape and said, Fred, you've got to watch this videotape. It changed my life, and I think it might yours too. Because I really trust him, I put in the video, and by the time the video was over, after 2 hours, my jaw was on the floor, and I said, the world is not what I thought it was. And it put me on a quest. This is where I discovered my sort of mission this lifetime, my purpose for being here. Was part of it was to find out what's really going on and then to make this information available in a way that is easily digested by anybody who wants to know. And thus the name of the website, wanttoknow.info. And so I began compiling all this information, specializing in looking for all the information that comes from the most reliable sources that are available. Much of the information there is taken from only the top media, for instance, the very top newspapers in the U.S., in Australia, and in Britain. And we have links direct to each article. So for each statement that is made on the website, there's a link that takes you direct to the article so that you can verify everything that is said. And when you start reading the information, for those who aren't aware of some of the major cover-ups going on, might be quite surprised at some of the information that is available on all of these things.
Well, the reason why, you're on here on BBS Radio right now is because the mission of bbsradio.com is to help people access this information and with just a little participatory shift in nature, be able to do their own research, find out the truth for themselves instead of having it being fed to them by you know, a quote unquote trusted source.
Mm-hmm.
And the more people who are doing this work, the more people who are alerting others to the fact that what we're being told isn't quite the whole picture. And in fact, a lot of what's really going on is completely suppressed and hidden from us. The better.
Yes, in fact,
we're in the unfolding right now, aren't we? The revealing.
Absolutely. In fact, I really appreciate BBS Radio and what you're doing, Liz, because it's very much in alignment with my own sort of life's mission. And it's really twofold. One is to help people who want to know to understand some of the dark shadow stuff that's going on well hidden from public view. But then not only that, but to say, and we can transform this whole thing.
Well, yeah, it's great when you can look at that stuff and still be able to have a positive outlook afterwards and not just crumble in a heap on the floor.
Yes, and so it's, you know, I wouldn't even put the information out there if it was just going to leave people feeling depressed and in fear or anger. It's all about turning this around and saying, hey, when we're willing to go in and look at the dark stuff, both in ourselves and out in the world, we can then work with it. And by having clear, deep intentions of wanting, for me, it's about wanting what's best for every one of us in the world. And working towards that, we can transform all of this. I know we can, and I know we will.
Well, when we come back, I'd love to have a chat to you a little further about some of that information, you know, working on core issues, being able to be more personally empowered through accessing intelligence of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So when we come back, let's do that. And for now, we're taking a break. This is BBS Radio. You're listening to Otherwhere with my guest, Fred Burks, from webofloveorg. And later in the show, before we end our time together, don't forget to stay tuned because he'll be taking the guided meditation / relaxation that we like to do. And we'll be back very, very soon. You're tuned in to bbsradio.com and Otherwhere with Liz Miller. My guest today is Fred Burks. Hello and welcome back.
Thanks.
So, Fred, it's been a roller coaster journey of unfoldment for you, which really kicked into high gear just 4 years ago, which I'm sure is actually the same for many other people. You know, 9/11 was, you know, nearly 6 ago now, and that event was a huge triggering event. It seemed to go right into the nervous system of the species, the human species. And if you could, would you briefly describe some of the experiences that you've had with discovering how to grow spiritually, how to bring out some of your abilities that are beyond the five senses to perceive reality, how you've developed your skills in meditating, and how you've actually gotten to the point where you're now teaching esoteric energy techniques. And you can do things like commune with the guides of, you know, your patients and the spirits of dolphins.
Yeah, it's been a wonderful journey, actually. My life has been incredibly blessed in many ways. And it really goes back to even when I was a child. My dad was a Methodist minister, although he was rather of the liberal, almost radical version. In fact, he was a conspiracy theorist. And I rebelled against his conspiracy theories. My dad was all the time saying that there's these evil people who run the planet. And he wouldn't say that from the pulpit, but he would say it to us.
Right.
So anyway, having a father who was a minister and just having a natural propensity in that direction, was very interested in spirituality. And like many preacher's kids, there's something called the PK syndrome, preacher's kids. I went on a quest to find out, well, what is this spirituality all about? And my first real opening happened right around, oh, it's 18, almost 19. And I was in a kind of a spiritual crisis. I had just left a bunch of close friends and moved somewhere and was having pressure to become a born-again Christian by this group and stuff. And so for the first time in my life, I put aside my own arrogance, which is my biggest issue in my life, and said, okay, God, if you're there, please show yourself to me. In the past, with my arrogance, I said, if God's there, I'm going to find it myself. I can prove it myself. But, you know, once I hit this sort of spiritual low, I said, okay, please reveal yourself to me if there really is a God. I was agnostic before that. And in the next couple months, I had major openings. Got some information that was unbelievable, had a whole download of information from past lives happen, and all this amazing stuff. And that set me clearly on the path that I've been on spiritually ever since then. And, you know, that path led me to meditation. It led me to, you know, deep expressions inside of myself, as well as exploring other religions around the world. And, well, let's see. So then if we jump forward, I had some major openings in 1998 when my heart energy was opened in a way that I've never experienced before. Some of your listeners may be familiar with the Kundalini rising experience. And I had a
They probably are. But please explain what it is for the others who don't know.
A Kundalini rising is a powerful surge of the sacred sexual energy that runs, or it normally resides dormant and quiet at the base of our spine. But when the heart center is really opened, sometimes that Kundalini energy will begin to move in our bodies. And if it's wide open, sometimes, very rarely, it doesn't happen very often at all. Most people have never had it. But the Kundalini energy will just shoot almost like a rocket up the spine and open up all these places that aren't normally open. And there's this experience of feeling wonderfully interconnected with all beings when that happens. It can also cause serious problems. And some of my friends have ended up in mental institutions who had a Kundalini rising experience, and that's not uncommon. So it's something...
If you're not prepared for it, you don't know exactly what's happening to you at the time.
Yes.
I'm not surprised it might send a few people to the mental institutions.
Yeah, so I don't recommend that people go and try to have a Kundalini rising experience. You know, there is a Kundalini yoga, and they say, you know, never do it without a teacher. You have to know what you're doing. I was very blessed at the time to be involved in a large seminar on sacred sexuality, and basically I was with a woman who knew what was going on. I did not know what Kundalini rising was at the time, but she said, oh, you're having a Kundalini rising experience. So she was able to be my guide for that experience, and I had a very wonderful, powerful experience. That opened me further to sort of other levels of energetic exchange, and just to an awareness of how much, I'll say for me, how much more real the energetic connection I experience with people around me and things around me is than the physical connection. In other words, sort of third dimensional reality that we live in, where things are hard, that everybody considers so real, has actually become less real for me, as I feel the energetic connection is the more crucial component of my interaction with all around me.
Oh, our creative intuitive powers are really, they're the pulse of the Godhead within us, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And when you realize that, you start to understand that something like channeling is really that creative pulse coming through you.
Mm-hmm.
And that, that in itself is proof that you are connected to the divine.
Mm-hmm.
That you have the power of your imagination to create on subtle levels. And, you know, before we can create anything, we have to first imagine it.
Right.
And it's that quality that we connect with the creator.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows us to look at ourselves and say, well, does that mean I too am a creator?
Right.
That I'm part of the great creator.
Absolutely. And in fact, as you know, this is part of what the Web of Love website talks all about. The first sentence on the Web of Love website is, the Web of Love is an energetic web which connects the divine essence of all beings on this planet. And it basically goes on to say that we're all interconnected through divine love. We're all a part of this divine play. And the more that we open to that, the more powerfully we can move in our lives from a place of connection and from a place of love.
You know, the letters DNA, I've heard referred to as standing for divine nature awoken.
Oh, beautiful.
And
that's great.
It really is, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
And I love talking about the DNA, and I probably will continue to talk about it quite a lot on this show.
Sure.
Because it's an area that everyone really must, in my opinion, get to know, get to understand. It's in every single cell of our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason for that. So I'm sorry to get off on a tangent there, but
sure.
I would like to ask you, if the divine nature awakened is inherently within us always through our DNA.
Well, of course you know that. Leading question.
what can people do to reimagine their lives if they're doing work that isn't being nurturing to them, or if they feel trapped? Say they've got, you know, kids, they've got the mortgage, they're barely paying the bills, and they know that their life isn't fulfilling to them.
Mm-hmm.
They know, because they can feel on some deeper level that there really must be more to life than what they're experiencing. How can people go about getting out of those loops that they're in and challenging themselves to experience more out of life?
Right. Well, here, come back to intention, which we talked about earlier. And for me, it's about getting clear on what are my deepest intentions in life. Because I look out and I see the vast majority of people really don't know what they want to do with their lives. I mean, they might have ideas, yes, I want to get married, raise kids, and all of this, but what about on the deeper spiritual level? What is it we're here for? What is it I am here for in this lifetime? And what is it that I want to carry with me as I move through my life? And for me, it's been incredibly powerful to have my deepest intention be all about choosing what's best for all in every moment of my life. And in a way, by choosing what's best for all, because all beings is the interconnectedness of the divine that we are all a part of. And by being in alignment or in resonance with all beings in the universe and allowing that to move me through my life, it creates all sorts of miracles and blessings. My life has been incredibly blessed. And I've lived with that strong intention since I was about 19. So as to what listeners can do, I think the answers are inside each one of us. I can't give you an answer, but I can give you suggestions. And my suggestion is to go in and find what is your deepest intention in life, or intentions, and to start working on those and to use them in your life every day. And in fact, on all of the websites I manage, there is a link to in the left-hand column that says Find Life Purpose. And if you click on that link, either on weboflove.org or wanttoknow.info or momentoflove.org, click on the Find Life Purpose link, and you'll find something that says Ideas on How to Find Your Life Intentions and Life Purpose. So I highly recommend taking a look at that.
Yeah, that's just so helpful to have someone just lay it out like that. And it harkens back to your work with The Simple Keys to a Successful Life, which is another piece that you've posted up on your websites, which contains some very, very easy to follow but incredibly powerful techniques to go about living a more successful life. And we should probably talk about that now, because
sure,
it's fascinating work.
Well, it links right in, because, by the way, if you go to the Life Purpose and Life Intentions page, there are examples given there of people who've developed their life intentions. And in fact, there's a link to Simple Keys to a Fuller Life, the little essay that I wrote that you're talking about.
I really recommend that people go out there and have a read of it, because it contains some very, very valuable and helpful information. And
that is simple, I would like to add. I mean, one of the things that I'm all about is trying to make things easy. And by carrying certain simple intentions and moving with certain simple principles, all of the complexity of life becomes much lighter. And in fact, I find my whole life is just filled with such a lightness of being that it's a joy.
Do you have any affirmations or statements that you use on a daily basis that help bring in more miracles or more
absolutely
joy to your life? Could you give us an example of a couple of those?
Well, they're right on my wall here, so I can tell you, you know, the ones that I do every morning and every night. This is a one sheet of paper, and this is something that people can do that I actually have on my wall. It's actually right above my bed, so that just before I go to sleep and right when I wake up in the morning, I can read. The title's My Life Intentions, and I have about 25 intentions written on here, but the top ones, which are under sort of a subtitle, My Foundation, are the most important. And the first and by far the most important is I will do my best to choose what's best for all of us. And in fact, you mentioned another way of saying the same thing that I often use is I give all that I am into the service of all that is. And it's really saying the same thing. I just want to do what's best for all of us, for all that is. And there's four main ones. And so the second main one is I welcome guidance in this from spirit, from my spirit guides, and from all around me. So spirit being, you know, God, goddess, whatever you call that great overriding force, the divine. Spirit guides, I know that each of us has guides, whether we're aware of them or not, that work with us and helping us to achieve our intentions. But then for me also, opening to guidance from all around me. Liz, you're my teacher. I've learned things just in my conversations with you over the phone. I can learn from everyone in my life as long as I'm willing to put my arrogance aside. You know, my arrogance is my big thing that wants to tell me I'm better than everyone else. So my big challenge in life is to set aside the arrogance and see everybody as my teacher. The third intention is, may I ever deepen my acceptance and understanding of myself and all around me. Because I find that by realizing that whatever is happening right now is already happening. In fact, there's nothing I can do about it. So if I can just accept what is, but then from there work to understand it and work to invite transformation in my own life and in the lives of those around me, then I can be on a continual journey towards an ever more expansive, ever more fulfilling life. So that's the third one. And the fourth is I deeply commit to personal and global transformation through love, healing, and empowerment. So this is one where I really talk about both the personal and global levels and transformation through love, through healing, and through empowerment. So it's basically four principles that I most deeply run my life on. In fact, this is what I write about in Simple Keys to a Fuller Life, which is the essay that you mentioned. So the four keys are what's best for all, opening to divine guidance, acceptance and understanding, and love and empowerment. So that's sort of a quick summary of how the intent I use to run my life. Now, an amazing thing I have to tell you is when I get into difficult times in my life and whatever sort of serious situations that present themselves, and I've had several like that, all I do is open up and say, okay, what's my intention here? I'm serious. So it may be some very complex, very difficult spot, you know, like getting an email saying, will you come and testify in Indonesia in the case of this alleged terrorist? It's like, oh my goodness, this is huge if I do this. What do? I open myself to guidance. And I say, help to guide me towards whatever's best for all people on this planet, for all people in the universe, all beings in the universe. And then I just trust, once I open, that I will be led in that direction.
Well, that's a really big part of it, and I'm so glad that you mentioned the word trust, because we all need to be able to trust life in general a lot more, but particularly trust in the promise mm-hmm. that we haven't been put here to live lives of misery.
Right.
And that... there is a point to our existence. It's not just some random cosmic joke.
Mm-hmm.
And trust is, I'm trying to get it out here. even if you don't say, have direct perceptions of your guides, you can't see them, for example, you can't
right.
hear them speaking to you. If you have the ability to trust and simply allow yourself to say, okay, they might be there, they might not be there, but if they are there, I'm going to trust that they are guiding me, even if I can't see that right now.
Right, and here's a key for me, Liz, on that. When I end up in situations going, how can this be what's best? How can this be the right thing? It's the knowledge that no matter what difficult experiences I end up in, that there's a reason for it, that I will be able one day to look back and go, oh, now I get it.
Yeah, when we can incorporate a higher purpose into the events of our lives, it certainly gives us a totally different perspective on what's actually going on. And it can turn something that's, you know, you can perceive as being really negative into something that's actually very, very positive.
Absolutely.
It's just you being able to see it in a slightly different light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I had one experience where it was a very difficult breakup with a woman who I love dearly, but you know how those things can happen. And boy, I was kind of an emotional mess. And it was so bad at times that the only way I could handle all of the emotional turmoil going on inside of me was to go out and take a run on the beach and run really hard and get it out. But even in the midst of all that turmoil, because of my deep spiritual belief, I knew that one day I would be able to look back and go, okay. And now, I mean, it only took about 2 years, and I could look back and go, wow, that taught me so much empathy for what people go through in relationships, because I have never experienced that level of turmoil in relationship before. And the empathy that I gained is invaluable when I talk with people now who are having difficulties in relationships.
That's a wonderful example, and it shows how having the experience, then, you know, start off with, okay, I'm going to have some trust and faith in my guides to take me where I really need to go. You then forget it, let it go, and just go about your daily life, and then have the experience that actually shows you that even though you couldn't see it before, you actually had been guided, and
right.
that you were right to
right.
put that trust into the you know, the possibility that it could happen for you.
Right.
And so once you've had the experience, you've got knowing. And
the more times you experience it, the stronger it becomes.
That's right. And the more you can trust it.
That's right. Exactly. Yes, to where the point where I sense this in you, Liz, that I no longer have any doubts. I mean, even if we were to have World War III occur, I'd say, okay, well, then this is what's meant to happen right now for the growth of our entire planet and race.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, I don't hope for that by any means.
Yeah. Yeah. It's totally about lifting yourself up out of your ego.
That's right.
Your own personal needs and recognizing that there's a bigger picture going on.
Absolutely.
And that maybe, you know, what's happening isn't exactly the way you'd like it to be.
Yes.
But in the long run, there's a higher purpose for it
yes.
all. And that
Absolutely.
It's taking us all somewhere better than where we are now, even though it may not seem to be, and in fact could seem to be taking us in the exact opposite direction.
Exactly, yep. Things are not always what they appear, and boy, I can
no,
show so many examples of that.
Well, I'd actually like to share one. When I first found out about BBS Radio, I was pitching for a time slot at a radio station here in Melbourne.
Uh-huh.
And it was a station that I'd been with before. I'd had some pretty good time slots. I did the breakfast time slot for a while for them, and you know, it was a quite popular host and all that sort of stuff.
Great.
And I was feeling very, very blocked by them when I submitted my proposal for a new show, for this show, and I couldn't understand why it was that they weren't being more supportive, or you know, just pretty much, hey Liz, come on, you know, what time slot do you want? Which is the way it actually was when I first started working for them.
Ah.
So it was really, really odd that they were being so sort of distant and unhelpful. And then the day that I found out that they weren't going to give me a show, I spoke on Newsom at BBS for the first time, and without even hearing, you know, a tape or a demo of any kind, he offered me a show on the spot.
Wow, that's great.
And it was...
Thank you, Don.
Yeah, and it was a friend who pointed out to me a few days later that that was the reason why the universe hadn't come through.
Right.
With, you know, with...
And so now you have an international audience rather than a local one.
Well, yeah, you know, something so much bigger and better was just around the corner.
Right.
And that, of course, whenever you have an experience like that, it gives you so much more strength to really believe that you're on the right path and what you're doing is the right thing or right. that you are being led in the right direction.
And yet at the time when they were saying no from the other station, I'm sure you're going, what's wrong? What am I doing wrong? You know?
Well, yeah, and it was illogical. That's
right.
the other thing.
Right.
So
I've had many experiences like that in my life.
Yeah, it's so great when you have them because they just teach you
mm-hmm.
In a way that you can't ever learn that without having the experience.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, let's see. We've got just a few more minutes till we go to the next break. So could we have a chat before we take the break about what we'll be doing in our meditation tonight?
Sure. Basically, I want to share with everyone something that I feel very passionate about and that I've put up on two of the websites, both Web of Love and Moment of Love, which is a way that I use to feel more connected with myself and with everyone around me. And basically, I've developed two sort of mini meditations, or you might call them mantras, things that you can repeat, things that I repeat to myself, which remind me of my connection with all people and with the hearts of all people around me. And I, doing this on a regular basis, I can sense the difference. As I said, the physical reality seems less real to me, and it's more about the connection, the energetic connection that I feel with everyone as I walk around me. And it is such a delicious feeling to feel connected with people and to be able to connect. Even, you know, I definitely have a more liberal viewpoint and do not support George Bush's policies. But the fact that I can sit there right next to him and feel a connection with his heart, and know that there's a place in his heart that just wants to love me and a place in my heart that just wants to love him, it's an amazing feeling. Even when I strongly disagree with his policies and would do whatever I can to stop some of the violence that is a result of his policies. So to me, it's a powerful thing to remember the common humanity that we share with all beings and to be a continual invitation to others to transform together through focusing on our common shared heart.
And the common shared part is so much more than our personality selves, our
mm-hmm.
ego selves. You know, that divine essence really, you know, you can't beat it, can you?
It is incredibly rich.
It's the most heightened experience you can have living to connect with that.
Yes. In fact, the mystics of many religions have, you know, talked about the state of bliss.
Mm.
And what they're really talking about is bliss is an incredible spiritual ecstasy of seeing and feeling and experiencing the interconnectedness of all beings.
And it's spiritual ecstasy, not just on an emotional or mental or spiritual level. It's also on a physical level because,
mm-hmm.
you know, our pineal glands produce copious amounts of opiates in our brain
mm-hmm.
That actually give us that physical sensation of ecstasy as well.
Right.
So it's something that everyone should keep in mind, that when people talk about, you know, enlightenment and yogis and metaphysics, that a lot of the time when they're saying that you'll get a lot higher,
mm-hmm.
you know, by meditating than you will by taking drugs ever,
right.
they're really onto it. It's true.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's an amazing experience, and those of your listeners who've experienced even a touch of that interconnectedness, I think, know what we're talking about. And the interesting thing is I think almost everybody has had a peak experience somewhere in their life where they go back and you remember just the deep feeling of love that they felt in that experience. For some people like me, I had some peak experiences out in nature when I was all alone and just feeling the interconnectedness. For other people, it's about deep relationships where they just felt love overflowing. But we've all had those peak experiences, and as you know, we can have more and more of that if we choose to carry that intention that we're going to feel more interconnectedness. So that's what these meditations are about, is a means of reminding ourselves that we are interconnected and feel that more and more if we want to.
Well, I'm really looking forward to connecting with the Web of Love after our break. So we'll be back shortly. We're going to take a couple of minutes off now. And when we return with Fred Burks, we'll be connecting once more with each other and the web of love in the Otherwhere Circle of Light. So please stay tuned and join us as we settle down for the end of the show. So before we go to the break, make sure that when we come back, you've got yourself somewhere comfortable, that you're lying down, you can turn off the phone. If you're doing anything where you need to focus, maybe do this relaxation later on, especially if you're doing anything as serious as driving a car, because you might just find yourself drifting off, and we don't want anything like that to happen. So this is BBS Radio. My name is Liz Miller, and you're listening to the multidimensional world of Otherwhere. We'll be back very, very soon. And we're back on BBS Radio. We're here with, we're continuing our dialogue with former top-level interpreter Fred Burks, and continue to ask questions about what it is to be a light worker and how it is that one might be able to unlock some of their own hidden potentials in terms of their abilities to do remote sensing, healing, be able to have psychic experiences of all different kinds, even manipulate the weather. It's all part of the same sort of field. So, Fred, thanks for being on the show. I'm so happy to have had you on this week.
Thanks so much for having me, Liz.
Before we go, I'd like to just quickly talk to you about some of the projects that you're working on right now. And I believe that you've been involved in some form with a project called the Challenge Project, which has been conducted in schoolrooms all around America, and I believe also even in Australia.
Yes, Challenge Day is the name of it.
Could you tell a little bit more about that project and your involvement with it?
Sure. Challenge Day is an amazingly transformative one-day program which goes into high schools largely around North America, though they've even done a program once in Australia. And in the course of one day, they create miracles beyond what you would believe is possible. Basically, they have two trainers, usually a male and a female, go in together. And these people are very well trained in how to first win the confidence of these sort of rebellious teenagers. Most teenagers tend to have some rebelliousness, and it's like, who are these folks? But through games and fun activities that get the teenagers interacting with each other, they kind of break the ice and develop a trust. And then by the later in the morning, they get people talking on deeper levels. They demonstrate by sharing some deep, often disturbing experiences from their own past lives and how it affected them and how it helped them then to transform into something more than who they were. And then they get these teenagers talking about it among themselves. Now, I don't want to describe the whole process, but basically by the end of the day, something completely magical happens when the teenagers see that, oh my God, we're all wounded. We're all feeling lonely and separate. We're all having these problems in our lives, and we all are in this together. And why are we being so judgmental and hateful of each other? So that by the end of the day, it's actually not uncommon at any one of these programs to have rival gang members literally hugging each other and saying, I'm sorry, sometimes in tears. And tears happen all over the place.
And I'm not surprised. I actually saw some of the video that's available on the web. And if anyone would like to actually go view it, you can check out the links, which are posted at my blog, otherwear.blogspot.com. And you can, if you forget that address, you can always go to bbsradio.com and link to it from my bio page there.
And another simple way, if they forget, is just go to any search engine like Google and type in Challenge Day.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll get their main website. And look for the videos, because the 15 minutes worth of video, it'll likely leave you crying. It left me crying just watching these things. It's so powerful.
There was actually a quote by Plato that I was reminded of when I was watching that video. It's, be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a hard battle.
Mm-hmm.
And in that exercise where the children are being asked to cross over the gym floor, you know, whether they've been discriminated, if they've been discriminated by because of their, you know, dress, their color of their skin, their religion,
their weight.
That's a really big one.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize after they've gone through a few different subjects that everybody.
I can't hear you now.
I think she just dropped. I know you're on the air still, but I think Liz dropped.
Okay, am I on the air?
You're still on the air.
Okay.
You might want to just keep going.
Sure.
And let the...
Okay, so apparently we've had a little technical difficulty and lost Liz for a moment, but I'll just continue along the vein that Challenge Day is just watching these videos will move you. And going to the website and seeing what they're doing. And this is a movement that's gradually spreading. It's been around for 18 years. I know the two people who founded it. They live not too far from me, and they're just wonderful, amazing beings. So I'll mention a couple of other things. If you go to the Web of Love website, which is at www.webofloveorg, you will see that there's a link on the left side of the page to Inspiring Stories. And if you click on that link, you'll see there's a whole list of headlines of wonderful, deeply inspiring stories that cover a whole range of topics. For instance, you even have Apple computer founder Steve Jobs sharing some stories from his life that are deeply inspiring, and you realize, oh my God, Steve Jobs is much more human than I ever thought. And I was just thrilled to see that he actually had something on that. You'll also find some wonderful essays on choosing love, find some deep, spiritually moving pieces. And in fact, if you were to go there right now, webofloveorg, to the inspirational stories. The third story, the title is Inspirational Videos, two short video clips, deeply move and inspire. And click on that one, it'll take you to the Challenge Day videos, as well as to a second video by a gentleman named W. Mitchell, who is also incredibly inspiring. So there are all sorts of wonderful, inspiring materials out there. And it's not just my website either. I'm sure all of you know that the internet is an amazing resource for going and finding means to inspire ourselves to further grow and to develop. All right. So I'm not hearing Liz. And we did want to invite all of you, though, to join us in a meditation for the end of the program. And for this meditation, I'd like to invite you to settle into a wonderful, comfortable position in your body. Notice your body right now. Just feel, what does it need to move and find a position that feels just right to relax and to open to your heart, to open to your own deeper spiritual essence. And to take a moment just to take a nice, full, deep breath. And let that breath go out. I invite you to open the possibility that breath is one of the doorways into a deeper state of being. In fact, there are times when I do nothing but sit and focus on slow, deep breathing with the intention of feeling the interconnectedness of all beings. And it's amazing, just simply doing that can take you into a wonderful, deeply transformative state. So I invite you now just to feel your breath. Notice the inhale. Notice how it feels to your lungs. To fully expand and welcome in the air around you. Letting it go. Letting whatever energy needs or wants to leave you flow out with the out-breath. And allowing yourself just to relax into a state of peacefulness. So now I'd like to invite you on a quick journey into the heart of all beings. What I'm going to do is just read the simple, brief statement on the Moment of Love website. It's actually on the very first page. And as you're focusing on slow, deep breaths, feeling your heart, feeling yourself right here, right now, sharing in this moment with all who are listening, I invite you to the awareness that every person in the world has a heart. Every heart has a place within that wants only to love and to be loved. Invite us all now to connect with that place of love in our own heart and in the hearts of all around us.
I'm sorry about that. I had Liz Miller back on the line, and she was on the line with you, and then her phone got so bad again, I think she was just going to wait and then close the show after you were done, but something happened again with her phone line, and so she's now again off the air, and I apologize for that, but
sure.
Do you want me to try to get her back on the air and maybe just let you finish?
What would you like?
It's up to you.
Whatever you think's best. I mean, you know the technology.
I'll let you just finish because her phone line seems to be...
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, just working with some technical difficulties here, and we can breathe right through any technical difficulties. Just being with the breath. Again, coming back to the connection with that place of love in our own heart. Breathing with that. That place that just wants to love and be loved. I can imagine myself being held. Imagine yourself being held. Feeling the love and allowing that love to flow. Let us take a moment now to open to the heart connection we share with all people through love. Letting just to take a moment now to be with that, to breathe the heart connection we share with all people on this planet. slow, deep, full breaths. Notice how much you can allow yourself to feel that connection. Really feel the love in everyone's heart that wants to reach out to you. Breathing it in. And then allowing the love in your own heart to flow out with your out-breath. Flow out to all the people around you. Now moving from the moment of love to the web of love. That interconnectedness of all of us. This web literally surrounds us, it envelops our planet and all of us who live here. We are all interconnected by divine love. And it's up to each one of us how much we choose to be aware of this connection. So I invite you now to choose to be aware. To feel this web of love of which we are an integral part. I'd like to invite you to join in a very simple exercise that allows us to feel and experience this web even more fully. And I call it breathing the web. It's two simple sentences. On the in-breath, taking a slow, deep inhale, simply say to yourself, "Your sacred love flows into me." And on the out-breath, slow, deep out-breath, "My sacred love flows out to you." You might even imagine someone who is very special and close to you. Imagine that person and do this exchange. Imagine them and say on the in-breath, "Your sacred love flows into me." Feeling it. And on the out-breath, "My sacred love flows out to you." Imagine another person close to you in your life. Do the same thing on the in-breath. "Your sacred love flows into me." "My sacred love flows out to you." And then allowing it to expand outward to your whole community, to the whole world. We're getting close to the end of our time here, so let's all join together in imagining all people in this world, that place in their hearts that just wants to love. And let's breathe in on the in-breath to all of these beings. "Your sacred love flows into me." And on the out-breath, "My sacred love flows out to you." Invite you to remember the simple exercise. And if you can't remember the words, simply saying "love to me" on the in-breath. love to you on the out-breath. That's all you need. I feel your love breathing in. I share my love breathing out. So I invite you, in whatever form feels right and best to you, to take this with you. I invite you to open to the possibility of ever deeper connections with ourselves and with all around us. And I want to thank you for joining us. Thank you for your deep commitment to be here with us and to feel this interconnectedness, to work towards clearer intentions and help to invite transformation to ourselves and all around us. Thanks to PBS, Don and Liz. Thanks to all who play a part in making this happen. So in parting, I just wanted to say that I breathe in your love to me right now. Thank you. All of you are out there listening. And I breathe a wonderful love inside of me out to you. Thank you. Thank you all so much. I wish you all the very best in your journey through life.
Thank you very much, Fred. It was wonderful to have you take that meditation today. So everybody, continue to breathe and know that I'm also breathing in your love as you send it to me now, just as I send my sacred love out to you as you breathe in and receive it. Know that we're all connected. We're always connected. And as long as we all are able to look inside our hearts, connect with the energy there, know that we will always be connected. So we'll see you next week. And thank you so much, Fred. Good night, everybody.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program. I wish you much peace and joy on your journey.